You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
We will get this Christmas music right here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's try this one more time. We're going to do better the rest of the year. Yes, it is beginning to look a lot like Christmas. I wish you could... the first part of that particular song, but wow. Well, you know what? It is live radio, ladies and gentlemen. Is it not? We ask that question rhetorically about every week. Wouldn't I mess something up? But in any event, welcome back to the show. James Edwards, TPC, Saturday evening. It is the Christmas season. The Christmas season is upon us now. We're a little rusty, but we're going to ease into it here over the course of the remainder of the year. We're going to get into December. It is Christmas time here on TPC, and we're going to have the music of the season to make you feel good while we're talking to standout guests like Steve King, who you just heard from, and now is Peter with us. All right, we got to get Peter Brimelow back on the line. He will be with us when he returns. Of course, Peter Brimelow, the editor of VDare.com, former editor of Forbes. If, you know, back in the day, you could have a difference of opinion with the shadowy cabal that runs our particular way of life and still be employed by publications like that. But Peter Brimelow is a par excellence author of the a best-selling book, Alien Nation, Common Sense About Immigration, America's Immigration Disaster. He's back for a wide-ranging discussion on news and current events, and I believe he is back now. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am, James, finally.
There we go. Now we're 5x5. All right. Well, it's great to have you back tonight. Did you get a chance to listen to Steve King's comments on the program in the last hour?
I certainly did, and of course I was in the audience when he gave his keynote address the last afternoon.
Yes.
Which was actually very successful. It is a real sort of... tour of Western civilization. He made his case very powerfully.
Yeah, he mentioned that he actually got to go over time. Now, you've spoken at Amrin, Peter. I've spoken there. Jared is quick with the hook. He actually was able to outmaneuver the hook and go late. So that's impressive in itself.
Yeah, but, that's remarkable. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, everything that Steve King said in the first hour, I couldn't find any cause for a disagreement. Of course, his championing of an America First immigration policy is something near and dear to your heart, a signature issue, but by no means the only issue covered there at VDare.com. Let's start there, Peter.
Well, you know, at VDare.com, we follow Steve King's career very, very closely for a long time. And in fact, our book club, James Kirkpatrick, actually did an interview with him on his book, Walking Through the Fire. We do have a disagreement with Steve King in that, you know, he quite completely contrary to what these swine in the Republican Party, in the mainstream media, to the extent that they can be distinguished, say. He's not, in any sense, a white nationalist, and he's certainly not a racial nationalist. He's always been a civic nationalist. He talks about Western civilization. VDare.com, you know, it's a fairly broad church, and we have people who take more racially conscious looks at what America is, as Jared Taylor does, and we have people who are purely civic nationalists. But he was completely innocent of any of that stuff. He was always a civic nationalist, and it did him no damn good at all. You know, they just wanted him out. And the reason they wanted him out was, I believe, because, you know, the immigration issue is central to the way the Republican Party elite runs itself now. It's not that, for example, Steve King, you know, one of the things about him is that he was extremely pro-Israel. But that didn't do any good at all. He was when he was under pressure from the primary, the Republican Jewish Coalition denounced him. And he was also extremely right to life, but the National Right to Life people denounced him. during the primary. So you know, he was very, very badly treated, and even you know, in some sense, what we say, we do take risks, and we are critical of a lot of we're politically incorrect, but he wasn't politically incorrect actually. They just wanted to find somebody they wanted to lynch like this. I mean, they're just very, very determined to maintain discipline. And I really do think that the key issue to the people who run the Republican Party is immigration. They're desperate to avoid any immigration patriot emerging as a leader, which is why they went to such great lengths, McConnell went to such great lengths to suppress Chris Kobach in his Senate race in 2020. And why nobody rallied behind Jeff Sessions and so on. They're very determined to prevent this issue from it's why they ran against why Kevin McCarthy spent money against Laura Loom and Herb Fryer, which was running on immigration moratorium, and Joe Kent in his primary, he was running on the immigration moratorium issue. The immigration is the key issue. I realize that I'm obsessed with immigration. It's what I do every day, but I really do think that the donors and the people who run the party really don't want this issue to surface. And I believe the reason is that they know if our leaders on this question, it will crystallize massive national opposition to the Great Replacement.
And he mentioned the Great Replacement. I asked him the pointed question. He didn't back down from it at all. And it is indisputable, in my opinion, that there is a replacement. Whether or not it's good or bad or intentional, that can be debated. But the fact that the historic American majority... Yeah, it's a fact. It's not a theory. It's not a conspiracy. It is a fact. And you can debate the hows and the whys and the whos and the whats, but you cannot debate it's occurring.
And of course, Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, just gave an interview saying that we've got to have amnesty for 11 or however many people there are. He said, showing it doesn't care how many people there are, 11 million or however many people there are, because Americans, he said, are not reproducing themselves. So in other words, he actually intends to displace them with new people. He's open about it. It's one of these things, like the War on Christmas, you know, what they say about the war. Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't. It's a number of things like this. It's kind of a double thing that the left has. It doesn't exist, and on the other hand, it's a good thing. And that's what they say about the Great Replacement. It doesn't exist, and also we're in favor of it.
Yeah, that's exactly, Peter. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you are exactly right. That is exactly what they say. I mean, in no uncertain terms. I mean, out of two sides of their mouth, they say it. And well, there you go. That's exactly what's happening. But of course, if you don't think it's a good thing, it's okay to admit that it's happening if you believe it's a good thing. If you don't believe it's a good thing, that's when it becomes a conspiracy and you're regulated to the back alleys of white supremacy and neo-Nazism and all of the other things that they like to pretend that we are.
Right. I mean, I think the behavior of the National Right to Life organization was absolutely disgraceful. I mean, they had no reason to get involved in Steve King's primary, but they did. And it just shows right now they're just Republican front groups, Republican leadership.
Well, this was something I was going to ask Steve King about, and we didn't have time for it. But I would like to ask you, because I think you are a person that is qualified to answer it and uniquely qualified, in fact. Now, the biggest political news. Well, ooh. There's the already. What is going on? My goodness. Well, you get talent. You surround yourself with talent, and time just seems to go by quickly. Hey, folks, the great and good Peter Brimelow, editor of VDare.com. If you don't have a copy of Alien Nation yet, what are you doing? We'll be right back with him.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
It's just such a beautiful time of year. It's beautiful music. You put Christmas music with an orchestral arrangement, and you've got something you can win with, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk with Peter Brimelow of VDare.com about the war on Christmas in a moment. We're going to actually talk with him the remainder of this hour about a variety of news and current events, and we'll get to it all in good time. But this was actually a question, Peter, I was going to ask Congressman King in the last hour, but I think you would be good to answer it as well. The biggest news story in America right now, as we broadcast live this Saturday evening, the biggest political news story the last couple of days, if you can believe it, is a story about Donald Trump having dinner with Nick Fuentes and Kanye West at Mar-a-Lago this week. Now, you and Jared Taylor attended one of Nick Fuentes' events. What is your take on how the media is framing this situation, its coverage of the fact that Donald Trump spoke with a couple of people that they hate?
Well, we're going back to 2016, really. The media, which is really basically the Democratic Party, is engaged in trying to paint Trump as an extremist, and that means that anybody who they can smear him with, they will smear him with. I actually think that Trump's announcement a couple of weeks ago was deeply disappointing. And from my point of view, he said nothing about immigration. In fact, he didn't say anything about anything that I really noticed. I think that's a very bad thing. But this meeting with Kanye and with Ye, I guess we have to call him, and with Nick Fuentes is very interesting development. And the question is, you never know with Trump, was it deliberate or not? It's hard for me to believe it was deliberate because, of course, what Ye is doing is raising the question of Jewish influence in the U.S., which, of course, is enormous and which nobody's supposed to talk about. It's very hard for me to believe that Trump wants to get into that because of his own administration was so heavily Jewish influence with his son-in-law and so on. But nevertheless, he's done it. So the question is, does he know what he's doing? It's even in some kind of visceral sense. Nick Fuentes is a very, very impressive personality. One of the things that came across to me when reading the various reports on this meeting in Mar-a-Lago was that Trump was impressed by him and said to Ye that he was very impressed by him. That really rings home true because Fuentes is extraordinarily articulate and very well informed. It's almost unnatural, actually, in somebody of his age. And you're right, Jared Taylor and I were at AFPAC, the meeting which he ran down in Florida this spring. It's an amazing performance. It's extraordinarily hard to hold meetings if you're on the distance right now. They're almost always cancelled by cowardly hotels. This is why VDare.com, we bought our own castle in West Virginia so we can hold meetings. But he was able to get 1,200. It was like a flash convention. You heard about it, where it was going to be 2 hours before by text message before it actually opened. and we all assembled there, and he had 1,200 people there. It was really an astonishing performance. So he has real, he's a real force, Quince is. And I'd be very curious to see what he thinks he's going to do now. I mean, I can't take Ye's run for presidency seriously. I think it's a stunt. But on the other hand, a lot of people who want the issues that he's raising raise. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I can tell you, having worked for Buchanan's third and final campaign in 2000 with the Reform Party, if you're not running as a Republican and a Democrat, the intricacies of getting on the ballot in all 50 states, because it varies from state to state, and it varies wildly. I don't think Kanye or anybody associated with that endeavor knows what they're getting into. I know a little bit about it. But they I don't think they do. So unless he's running in the Republican primary, he's going to be up against some tough sledding. But I will say this. Say what you will about Nick Fuentes, but I found the left's platform, up to and including child genital mutilation and the Great Replacement, you know, all of that is much more reprehensible than anything Nick Fuentes has ever said or done. I have a culture gap, Peter. I mean, I'm in between the old war horses like you and Jared. I'm 42 years old. Nick Fuentes is about 20 years younger than I, but I always sort of skewed to an older heart. You know, at the end of a conference, I'm playing bingo with Kevin McDonald or something after, you know, in the after hours. So we're stylistically different, but I don't think that matters. You know, yes, he makes irreverent jokes, you know, about Cookie Monster and things like that. But had it been me or you or Jared or anyone else, had it been Pat Buchanan, it would have been the exact same article. Only the subject would have changed. And instead of Nick Fuentes,
you mean if any of us
yeah, yes, had dinner with Trump this weekend, it would have been the exact same article with the exact same adjectives. The only thing that would have changed was the name of the subject. And the article was already written and ready to go for a situation such as this, and it wouldn't have mattered who it was. And that's how the media works. The story would have been the exact same.
That's right. Now, of course, from my point of view is... What's this got to do with immigration, which I happen to think is the key issue? And I just, at the moment, I just don't know. I know Nick is understands the issue. And I believe Milo does. Although with Milo, who knows which direction it's going to go. But as for Trump, I just don't know. I mean, there was a time when he did understand it, but he hasn't said anything about legal immigration for a very long time.
Well, I mean, that was, of course, that was his burst onto the scene, right? You know, his initial announcement, the golden escalator.
Absolutely right.
It was immigration that got him on the map, and so all of that's gone. And you know, I don't know. I never did figure it out in 2016 because, you know, we got credentialed. We were credentialed media at some of the Trump events, and the Trump campaign solicited an interview for Donald Trump Jr. on this program. Then, of course, they never knew who we were. They didn't know who Nick Fuentes was. They don't know who anybody is. So you never know what's really going on there. There's some footsie being played. Right. And then, well, of course, you too, Peter. Peter, you too. There, I was there in the arena when Trump accepted the nomination, and I saw V-Dare being promoted in the arena on signage at the Republican National Convention. But you know, again, they never know anything about what they're doing.
Then immediately disavowed it. Yes, that's right. It's all surrounded by paper, but an awful lot of people in the Trump campaign were just absolutely orthodox Republicans. And when they faced any controversy, they just run for the hills. And he wasn't able to get a grip on that.
Well, what about the need for our spokesman and I want to talk about immigration. I want to talk about the incoming Republican House majority. I want to talk about practical politics with you in just a moment and other things. But what would you say about the need? You know, when I look at the people who are doing things right, you know, we mentioned, you know, there are a lot of people doing things right. There are people that are not doing things right. But, you know, you and Jared and some of the mainstays on this program, obviously with V-Dare and Amren, are doing things right. I would like to think that we try to do things right here with regard to the way that we present the message. What is the importance of doing things professionally if you're representing this, you know, dissident cause right now, building bridges with the mainstream, you know, as Jared has done and as you have done, and building bridges with people who can take our heartfelt concerns to the next level?
God, that's a really difficult question, James, because, you know, one of the things that's emerged since 2015 is that the reign of terror has gotten much worse. And the ability of people in the mainstream media to say these things has really been cut off. And above all, they can't quote us or relate to us. And if they say, if they even say something that is we say, but don't cite us, the enforcers are on them immediately. This is something that Vidair says. So the Reign of Terror is much more intense. But I guess that is partly a reflection of their weakness. They know that they're sitting on top of a volcano here, and they have to keep stomping it down. I mean, there's a reason that Ann Coulter, you never see Ann Coulter, who wrote a great book, Adios America, in 2015 about the new relationship. You never see her even on cable shows anymore. She used to be at one stage on network TV, then she was on cable TV. Now she's not. She's just completely excluded from anything. They just don't want any spokesman of any kind on any of these issues.
We mentioned that in the previous hour, the fact that you were regularly featured on C-SPAN and other cable news programs in a better time, and it wasn't that good of a time, but it was better than what we live in now. And you're right about Ann Coulter. By the way, Ann Coulter will be on this program in January. I just actually got an email from her today. So, I mean, yeah, that's, but, you know, honestly, she should have her own. You know, I said this about, it could be anyway, Mark Weber. You should all be anchoring your own desks. She should be anchoring her own desk.
You know, she's one of the greatest television debaters of the era. And so she's never allowed on television to debate anybody. It's just extraordinary. Dan Stein, who is the head of FAIR, the Federation of American Immigration Reform. Now, I hear some music, James. Shall we meet?
Listen. Hey, this is a guy who's a media pro. Peter Brimlow has been doing it far longer and far better than I. So he knows when it's coming up time for a break. So we're going to take one, but we still have half a program to go. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to talk with Peter about the incoming House majority of Republicans, what he would like to see them do, and, so much more. Stay tuned. He's coming.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
The Walmart employee who fatally shot six co-workers before turning the gun on himself left a note on his phone hours before the incident. Police in Chesapeake, Virginia released a copy of the note found on his phone. It's not clear when the note was written, but the gunman identified as Andre Bing claimed he was harassed and said he was pushed to the brink by a perception his phone was hacked. He wrote that his only wish would have been to start over from scratch and that his parents would have paid closer attention to his social deficits. The 9mm handgun used in the Tuesday night shooting was purchased legally. An online spending record was made on Black Friday, $9.12 billion according to Adobe. Overall, sales were up 2.3% thanks in part to electronics. Many consumers embraced flexible payment plans as they continued to deal with high prices and inflation. Gaming consoles, drones, Apple MacBooks, Dyson products, and toys like Fortnite and Roblox were among the hottest items this year. The Federal Communications Commission is banning the sale of communications equipment made by Chinese companies Huawei and ZTE. The agency is also restricting the use of some China-made video surveillance systems, citing an unacceptable risk to national security. The 5-member panel unanimously approved the new rules on Friday. It's the latest in the escalation of U.S. restrictions on Chinese technology that began under the Trump administration. Early voting has begun in Georgia. The top of the ticket is the hotly contested Senate race between Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker. Democrats already have control of the Senate, but a Warnock victory would give Democrats a 50-verse vote in the upper chamber, giving the party outright control. There's a new COVID variant known as XBB. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-568-2790. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-568-2790. 800-568-2790.
It's not too early, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's still November, but it is post-Thanksgiving, and that is when the Christmas season starts on TPC's annual broadcasting calendar. Every year now for 18 years. Can you believe we've been on the air for 18 years, ladies and gentlemen? Wow. But this is a very special time, and what a wonderful way to kick off the Christmas season on this particular broadcast with Steve King and Peter Bremelow tonight. I mean, are you kidding? What an embarrassment of riches. What a wonderful tandem. Peter, back to you, my friend. Listen, let's talk practical politics for a moment. Get your opinion on this because, you know, you were, I don't want to say an insider as like a slur or derogatory type of thing, but, I mean, you were in with the in crowd, you know, certainly much more than most. And so I'd like to get your take on this. You know, the media's narrative was that the midterms were a huge win for the Democrats, but was it really? They battled to a draw in the Senate. The House flipped 222-213 in favor of the GOP. So the Republicans flipped the House. They'll control the House by the same margins as the Democrats controlled it over the course of the last 2 years, an 18-seat flip. At the last time I checked, not that it matters, but Republicans were winning the nationwide popular vote. SCOTUS has been doing some good things, better than normal at least lately, in our position to do any more. So, I mean, was it a huge win for the left on election night, or was I just misreading it, or was the narrative just sort of skewed in their favor?
No, they believe what they want to believe, and they want to believe, you know, they were obviously very relieved that it wasn't much worse than it turned out to be. But basically, you know, it's a solid performance by the Republicans. Not as good as it should have been, but then they didn't run the race they should have done. You know, what they should have done is nationalize the race and announce they were going to impeach Joe Biden for treason on the border, letting 5 million illegal aliens in. But they didn't do that, and they're still not doing that. McCarthy's vaguely talking about possibly looking into impeaching Mayorkas, the Interior Secretary, you know, who should have, Homeland Security Secretary, you know. But he's not the issue. The issue is Biden and Harris. If they impeach Biden and Harris together, which they could do because she's supposed to be the immigration czar, you know, the Speaker of the House will become president. So what are they waiting for? The answer is, you know, the cowards, the stupid, and the donors don't want that anyway because the donors want immigration. No, it's a pretty good result, and I think we both think very highly of Brad Griffin, Hunter Wallace, Occidental descent. I think his analysis is truly remarkable. I mean, he basically points out there was a red wave in the country. Well, of course, first of all, there was a red wave generally because there was a red wave in 2020. The Republicans gained in 2020. But sometimes you see these things saying, well, there was supposed to be a huge, you know, the off year, the president's supposed to lose lots of seats, but they lost lots of seats in 2020. So you have to add them both together. Really. But what Griffin points out, and he's right about this, is that there's a wave throughout the South, and it extends right up to where we are now in West Virginia. You know, West Virginia, which was a Democrat state until maybe 15 years ago, now the Republicans not only have a supermajority in the legislatures, but they've increased their supermajority. And that's the case right across the South. So basically, we basically have two nations. There are two white nations, at least, in the U.S. But broader speaking, it's the North and the South. It's the North that's the problem. White Southerners have decided that they're fed up with the regime and they're massively voting against it. Now, the North is confused, but it's not all bad up there. I mean, there's serious movements in New York State, for example, because of the crime issue. And so the great question really for the American nation, the historic American nation, which is fundamentally the white nation, is how do we crack into greater New England from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon? I gave a speech in 2016, actually, at Hellgate, you know, the most denounced NPI conference.
Yes, yes.
Which is on V-Day, and I urge everybody to read this. Everybody to read it. They said this next step is to crack into Great New England. And there are various ways to do that, none of which the Trump administration did. In fact, they did the exact reverse. They attacked Ryan's tax policy that Trump stupidly adopted. You know, reduce the state and local tax deductions from federal taxes. And I noticed that Peter Navarro, in his book on the Trump administration, says that alone was responsible for cost him several seats in Southern California, because these high tax states, people needed those deductions against the federal income tax. But they weren't thinking in those terms. From a wonkish point of view, of course, he's right. You shouldn't allow states to raise taxes and dump the costs onto the federal government. But from a political point of view, you're just imposing enormous costs on people who should be voting for you, the white suburbs in Los Angeles and in New York and so on. He didn't think about this at all. They never think about parties in racial terms. They've trained out of it. If you talk to Republican operatives, you find out they flinch if you start asking about the racial base of the coalition. But that's actually what drives American politics.
Well, sure it does. Sure it does. And you're referencing some of the things that I have read post-election and specifically at Occidental Dissent. And that is that I think, to put it bluntly, you have various different nations living on this one continent, but they are divided into two different blocks, and that is red and blue, or Republican and Democrat. And the convention, you know, what we're seeing from the media is that Roe versus Wade was a terrible, terrible thing for Republicans, but it wasn't in the South, as you mentioned, Peter. In the South, the red got redder, and the supermajorities got more super, and there was even outliers up in places like New York, where the Republicans flipped some seats, and even in blue states like Oregon, I mean, the entire county, the entire state is red except for Eugene and Salem and Portland. I mean, you know, so the metropolises. So this is something. Yes, I mean, what you're talking about is if the Republicans. I remember years ago, you made an appearance. You've been on this show. You've been a mainstay since our inception. But I remember one thing you said a couple of years ago, maybe more than that. I don't remember. It all blurs together now. But talking about how the Republicans could do more if they would actually feed their base, basically, is what you said. And, you know, if they were running a campaign to win, if they were running, I think, a campaign to receive backlash on the economy and other things that they thought would help them. And instead of running a campaign that defined who they are and what they were going to do for their base, they wanted to have the backlash reception to a poor economy. And it worked well for them. I mean, they have more power now than they did a month ago, but they could have done better. How could they have done better, Peter? What specifically should they have done that they didn't do?
Well, as I say, I mean, I think they should have nationalized the race, which they didn't do. And they should have focused on the collapse of the southern border. And they should have said what they were going to do about it, namely impeach Biden. And I think that would have transformed the race.
No, I was just going to say very quickly, pardon the interruption, but in some of these very contested races, you're talking about the difference between winning and losing is 1 or 2 percentage points, you know, very often.
Yeah.
And if that's the case,
I mean, actually, that's the other thing I should have said to James about this race. You know, it's easy to overinterpret these races. An awful lot of them are extremely close. Just a few votes the other way, and we'd be celebrating a great Republican victory, you know, or a great patriot victory, really. Although, of course, the people controlling the party, not patriots. I'm about to run an article. After 2020 election, we did an analysis of the makeup of the Democrat vote, and it was a very interesting election that, for the first time, a majority of Democrat voters were not normal, started to say, straight white Gentiles. if you put together people, non-white vote, the Jewish vote, homosexual vote, they've gone over 51%. And I said that this, what this means is the Democrat Party's tipped. It's a party that's now in the hands of non-normal whites, which wasn't the case, you know, in 1960. I mean, in 1960 was the last election. I think 64 was the last election in which Democrats got a majority for the white vote. So, you know, for damn close to 50 years, they've not had a majority of the white vote. And it's taken away from, like, a housing project. Now, we've just done these numbers again. I've not published them yet. But they're even more dramatic, partly because the number of people who identify as homosexuals has dramatically increased. I don't know whether that's real or not, but whoever they are voting heavily Democratic. So I think about 56% of the Democrat vote in 2020 was non-normal white Americans. Were not normal white Americans.
Well, and that's
so
the problem.
I mean, it's tipping. Yeah, it's tipping. That's why the party's run by lunatics.
Let's take a pause right there. The final pause for the hour. We have but one fleeting segment remaining with the great and good Peter Brimelow. VDare.com. Hey, they've got their end of year Christmas fundraising drive going. It's a cause worth supporting. VDare.com. We'll be back with Peter next.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they use the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power, Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1, that behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2, Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present day end time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
There we go. Now we're getting the hang of this thing. It's been a year, hasn't it? But hey, Peter, if we don't get a chance to talk to you again before December the 25th, I want to wish you Merry Christmas here on the air. And I know that VDare has been a real catalyst in talking about the war against Christmas. Not just the war against Christmas, but the war against Thanksgiving, the war against Columbus Day, the war against anything even tangentially related to white Western civilization. And I want to thank you for that and wish you that Merry Christmas, my friend.
Thank you, James. Thank you. I'm hoping to get cards out this year.
Oh, you that's something we always, well, I can't say laugh about. I mean, it is true. We are on each other's Christmas cards list, and I'm a better man for it. And you will get, as a matter of fact, I'll let you all know that we, the Edwards family, will be going out at 2:30 on Monday to take our, we have an appointment to take our Christmas pictures for 2022. And so we will be getting those cards together and sending them out. Yes, we will. We do that every year. We're very diligent and dutiful about that. That is something I don't let slip. And so we'll see how it goes this year. But I'm looking forward to it. That's coming up on Monday. And we're going to send out TPC's fourth quarter letter in the next week. And some of you will be receiving that card. Okay, that said, Peter, let's get back to practical politics, but also a little bit more than that. I think that everybody should be building parallel societies. And by that I mean forming a group, a community with like-minded people, whether it be members of your church or your local area. People that will help you out if you have a flat tire. People that will help you out if your roof needs to be patched. People that will help you out if you need a babysitter or medical care or you need a job. You need to have that close-knit community. I think that's the most important thing. We, you know, Jane and John, Main Street USA out there, they ask, what can we do to be part of the solution? I think that's the most practical thing anybody can do right now. And in the meantime, history teaches us that bloated, decadent, overextended empires eventually fall. And I don't think that the global American empire is going to be the exception to that rule. And I don't think that any of us should do anything to hasten the fall. But it is likely to happen. And I'm fine with that. I'm a secessionist. You know, I don't think that there can be, personally, I don't think there can be any reconciliation with the left. They are too far gone. You know, in the War Between the States era, we had a commonality. We were all still of one people. We were all of still a similar faith and similar culture and so on and so forth. But what binds us together now? Consumerism? An economy? What happens when the economy collapses? And it will. America will never again be the United States, and I'm fine with that. I don't want to be engaged in a collaborative effort with people who hate me, who hate my ancestors, who hate my history. But until the time for alternative solutions come, yes, I still vote. I don't think we can reform. I don't think we can reform the system from within at this late stage of our decline, but I still vote, and I do what I can with the options that are on the table currently. And with that being said, let's toss it back to Peter Brimelow. Peter, well,
you know,
first,
James,
respond to that.
As I am so damned old, I actually remember very clearly the mid-1970s. After the fall of Vietnam, the entire conservative movement was in despair. And we thought that, I remember having a meeting, talking to Bill Rush, the publisher of National Review, and he said, when I first met him, which was in 75, and he said, confidentially, we're doomed, and the red flag will wave over the world. We need to solve the human, which was
in the 70s.
Mid-1970s, yeah. And it was it's hard to describe how completely depressed people were after the fall of Vietnam and the tremendous expansion of the Soviet Union. They built this blue water navy that seized Angola and Mozambique. They were really on the move. And also, of course, you know, it was obvious that the government was riddled through with communist sympathizers. And as you know, McCarthy was defeated in the early 60s, in the early 50s, late 50s, and we've never been able to get past that. But nevertheless, it also suddenly miraculously changed. And Reagan was elected and proceeded, went on to win the Cold War. So for that reason, I'm reluctant to be totally apocalyptic now. I think the trends are very bad. I don't see how, it's very difficult to see how the U.S. can hold together on its current course. I mean, one major reason is that the entire ruling class in America has reneged on its bargain with the South. I mean, there was a very extensive discussion after the Civil War about what there was South and North and reconciliation. And all these Confederate generals got pardons and all that kind of thing. And that's the reason why the North was prepared to allow the statues to be put up and all that. That's all been reneged on, you know. Well, when I first came to the States in the 1970s, if you were in the South, you saw the battle flag anywhere, everywhere. Nobody thought anything of it. You know, it was the flag of the white South, and it's been completely that bargain's been completely broken. So they are going to see repercussions from that in terms of the laws holding the country together. I mean, quite obviously, a lot of these states should be subdivided. There was a Supreme Court decision under Nixon, which prevented the set states from having to insist that they go to this one man, one vote thing, which in effect means that the big cities dominate the hinterlands. That can't happen at the federal level because the U.S. Constitution allows for the Senate, but an electoral college. But of course, the left is working on that. They want to abolish both. But in fact, it should be doing exactly the opposite. It should be restoring state senates to represent several communities rather than representing one, being with one man, one vote. And the only answer to the oppression that these rural areas feel by the big cities is secession. I mean, Southern Illinois should secede from Chicago. Western Maryland should secede from Baltimore. These are also, and for that matter, Northeast California, a large stretch of Northeast California, which are heavily Republican, they should all be divided away from Los Angeles and San Francisco. These are all changes which can and should be made.
Well, you know, that's the old saying, land doesn't vote, people do, but there is a vast difference between what you see in terms of votes.
I mean, the whole point of federalism, is to represent the several communities, different communities. Recognize that the communities are not the same, and so there has to be some way of reconciling them, and that's what the institution of the Senate is for. And now the Canadians, unfortunately, they are run from what is in effect the House of Representatives, which is why the central Canada can dominate these vast hinterlands.
That's the thing. Well, I mean, but the thing is, too, I mean, yes, it would be one thing if 90% of the entire population were living in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, places like that, and then 10% were living in the hinterlands. But, I mean, it is a true 50-50 split. It is a 50-50 split. And so, therefore, and that's according to the, you know, the counted vote, or what's presented to us as the counted vote. And so therefore, I mean, there is more to it than what meets the eye. Now,
well, I mean, even the question of being a 50-50 split. If there's a community which feels itself to be separate, as, for example, West Virginia does, there's absolutely nothing in common with Washington, D.C. at all, then it shouldn't be ruled by D.C., even if it's smaller, even if it's only less than a million people. There's a point at which those people are going to say, what do we actually have in common with these people? Why do I have to pay attention to them? What legitimacy does this rule have? And so that's why these states have got to be subdivided, and why we have to hold on for Senate as an institution. That's why the left wants to abolish the Senate.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, if the North Sentinelese on the North Sentinel Island can maintain their Stone Age culture without fear of repercussion, why can't half of the American population, at least half, do the same? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you to go to vdare.com. I talked with Peter before the show tonight. I am at vdare.com, if not every day, several times a week. And it is one of the very best outlets for our people. You need to be supporting the best of the best, and that's what Peter Brimelow is. He's been doing this for so long, and it's such a great sacrifice. I mean, Peter could have been in with the in crowd. He could have done the wine and cheese circuit, and that would have been good enough. But he chose a higher calling.
I'm too ornery for that.
Well, Peter, let me ask you this. Last question. And listen, again, Merry Christmas. I hope even in this late date of November that Christmas has fallen on the Vedere Castle there in the beautiful hills of West Virginia. But without having a Republican-controlled Senate, what are some of the things you would like to see from the House? At least, what would you like to see the House advocate for between now and 2024?
I mean, in terms of what needs to be done, they have to obviously pass an immigration moratorium. They have to end birthright citizenship. They have to throw Puerto Rico out of any kind of relationship with the with the U.S. Union, is insist that Puerto Rico be independent to prevent the Democrats from making it a state. The same thing with D.C. They should merge it with Maryland or something, so the Democrats don't get to make it a state. I think they should impeachments up and down the board. I think we should start impeaching judges. You know, the liberal criarchy, the judges have simply completely lost sight of what the law means. They just rule whatever way they want. Now, the Supreme Court has shown some signs of reining that in, but even there, it's too cowardly to admit that the rationale used to overthrow Roe should also be used to overthrow the gay marriage thing. Merry Christmas, James.
Merry Christmas to you, too, and to your wife and to your children, to your entire family. Folks, VDare.com, if you want to stay in touch with Peter Brimelow, you want to stay in touch with the good work that they're doing there and all that they advocate for, I will guarantee you this. If Peter Brimelow was our czar, you would have to worry tonight going into the Christmas season. Peter, God bless you. Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon. Stay tuned, everybody. Third and final hour coming up next.